So, as I shared last night, Father John Oliver wrote a manuscript and has shared it in various places. He's Laura's husband. Laura's here, but taking care of some things with her daughter right now. And they're from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. We didn't know each other there, but I'm saying all this to give him credit for these stories. He was the one that wrote the story about the woman, the saint. And I'm going to share another story with you from him. If the rain gets loud and you can't hear me, I am rather soft-spoken, so let me know, especially in the back, if you can't hear me. Anybody, if you can't hear me. You started. You're up. So I invite you to close your eyes if you prefer. Here's another example of parts of us playing some undiscovered yet important role, as it may be a relatively common phenomenon. A young girl, Laura, we're going to call her Annie, struggles with her weight and suffers much because of it. The embarrassment, the shame, the awkward social interactions, the crushing inner voice of self-loathing that say, I'm big, I'm lazy, I'm nothing. Over time, however, Annie gets greater control over her body and gradually develops into a fit adult. Only now, she excludes action and exercise and motion and schedule and discipline. Annie has developed into a real type A personality. And she expresses the burden of her activity, the level and stress level to her friends. What is most common refrain she hears in return? You need to slow down. You need to take it easy. You need to relax. To which Annie replies, I know, I need to slow down, take it easy, and relax. But such affirmations never work. They never last. Why? Because those are the exact words that the critical voice inside her head uses against her. If I slow down, I will become that heavy girl again. If I take it easy, I'm lazy. If I relax, I will let it all go and once again feel that shame, that embarrassment. I will be alone. And all this proclamation happens at a level just below consciousness. Now notice what is happening. A part of Annie from her deep past is terribly wounded with shame and embarrassment. So another part of her, the critical drill sergeant part, the perfectionist part, rises to serve a very particular function. To protect her from ever slipping back into that little girl who feels such shame, embarrassment, and aloneness. So when her friends give her the very obvious, even very loving advice of slowing down, take it easy, relax, they are unknowingly reinforcing the very cycle that keeps Annie from slowing down. Some part of Annie believes if she takes their advice, she will slip back into a world of isolation and self-loathing. You can open your eyes. So, even if we don't struggle with that particular struggle, we all have that inner dialogue that I bemoaned about last night. And that inner dialogue is worth knowing. It's worth becoming familiar. Hopefully you all noticed your self-talk in the quiet moments throughout last night and this morning. Hopefully you've been kinder to yourself. Being kind to yourself and having compassion for yourself, not having pity. And this addresses the idolatry issue that we were talking about earlier, right? That if we have pity on ourselves, then we get into idolatry. We get into that self-loathing, and we just get too consumed with me, me, me. But if we are compassionate, and we start at the core of Christ's compassion for us, like in the Good Shepherd icon, then we find our path to knowing ourselves in a way that depends on God, not depends on us. So when you're hard on yourself or aren't kind in your inner dialogue, pause. Invite the compassion of Christ to minister and comfort that part of yourself. This will eventually lead to being kind to yourself and setting that strong foundation to be able to actually appreciate your anxiety as your inner alarm system that God created it to be. So oftentimes, for example, when I'm in my Martha energy, I have anxiety. And that anxiety is good because it's telling me to slow down. But most of the time in our day-to-day ongoings of life, that anxiety makes us do more. So that's why it's worth listening to, because it actually is trying to get us to do the opposite. If we're not familiar with that inner alarm system and what it's trying to say to us, then it can actually fuel the energy to propel us towards more anxiety. So by bringing God into our painful memories, we begin to learn from Him how to be compassionate towards ourselves. He wants to meet us in our shattered dreams. Like the second prayer of our Holy Unction service reflects the woman who washes Jesus' feet with her hair and is told, as often as you fall, arise. Okay? So every time we fail, every time we mess up, every time we don't accomplish what it is we set out to accomplish, we fall and we rise up, not in our own strength, but in God's grace and compassion. And that is strength, right? That is the strength that helps us go back to those painful memories, is compassion. Because compassion, it fuels curiosity, it fuels courage. Right? If I'm approaching something dangerous, I need courage and something painful. But before courage, I have to have compassion to have that strength. So, becoming aware of the different voices in your thought life will help you take them captive. In 2 Corinthians 10:5, Paul talks about taking our thoughts captive. And I have this visual that stuck with me. The visual is about being kind to ourselves. So yesterday I really drilled, and I want to drill it again the whole thing. So if I have a negative thought, I want to both surrender it to Christ, take it to confession if necessary, right? If we feel led to, if we feel convicted to. So it's both sin and it's something worth listening to. So it's both and. So Paul says, take every thought captive, bring it into the submission of Christ. Do we take it captive with a metal claw, right? So this inner, it's called different things for different people, but kind of like this moral detective or moral policeman, right? Am I being moral enough? Am I behaving as a Christian? Am I behaving orthodox enough? God bless you. There's two right there. This moral detective is like a metal claw. It's harsh. It's like, oh, you did wrong, right? Some people call it a drill sergeant. It's in the story. I did wrong. Okay, I gotta stop doing that. I gotta get better. Like, that's the metal claw dialogue. It's harsh and brutal. Versus a butterfly net. Mm-hmm. Accomplishes the same thing. It's gentle. It requires precision, right? You can't just go like that and hope to catch a butterfly net or a butterfly. They're going to fly. They're going to get away. But a butterfly net catches the thought gently. That's what I'm proposing, is the perspective, an alternate perspective to how we handle our inner dialogue. So a couple of you mentioned the intense chatter that comes on at night. And this is a way in which the butterfly net is a way in which we can take those thoughts captive. Listen, what is the thought actually saying? So not the words it says, but the essence underneath it, right? And if you don't have that perception, it's worth writing in a journal, what is the thought saying verbatim, the incessant thought, and then praying about it. Asking God to show you, reveal to you, what is this really about? Talking to a friend about it. I know my friends, it's so helpful to bounce my thoughts off them, because then they can sometimes hear what I'm not saying, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, even get the essence of it. We're all way too close to our own inner dialogue. Okay. Most of us, I talked about the inner, the inner moralizer, constantly holding thoughts and feelings up to standard, right? Certain bar of standard. While that's not bad in and of itself, our inner moral checking can get out of hand, and it can become an idol, right? So if I'm constantly obsessed with my behavior and constantly thinking about how I have failed God, I'm no longer thinking about God. I'm thinking about my behavior. And so that moralizer becomes an idol, to use someone's language from earlier. That constant thinking about what I didn't do right, what I could have done better, that's not what we're called to in our faith. Our faith is about a relationship with our Creator. And from that relationship, He reveals to us what we already have inside, the goodness that we have inside. Alright, so there's a lot of converts in here. One of the things that just made me a magnet to Orthodoxy was the claim of goodness inside. Mm-hmm. In my Southern Baptist environment growing up, it was a Calvinistic theology of we are tainted and marred at the core. That doesn't sound right. In Orthodoxy, we can claim the goodness of God in us. Right? We're not good in and of ourselves. We're good because of whose image we are made in. And so, last night, and I'll do it again, catch yourself doing good. Right? Give God credit for that. Oh, just hold on.
No.
Your neighbor. Okay, so our inner moralizer can sometimes be functioning from the passion of envy. Envy of a good life, virtuous life, and moral life. We can all do better to accept life's hardships and our imperfections. So while our moralizer is a part of us to be aware of as Christians, it's also a part that's trying to help, right? It's trying to help us be more like Christ. Trying to help us with incredibly good intentions, but it's also missing the relational mark of what we're created to be in with God. So I want to read you a quote from, let's see, here's this quote. It's in your handout. If you want, you don't have to look at it, I just want you to know you have it. Metropolitan Emilianus. Some last name is not next. I can't roll my R's. My husband tries to teach me. Christian asthesis does not mean literally to kill the desires. So if you talk about envy, our four desires that we tend to want to reject, vanity, vainglory, lust, envy, jealousy, these are all synonyms in such a way, despondency, anger, I'm missing a bunch, pride, greed, gluttony. Yeah. So he's saying Christian asthesis does not mean to literally kill these desires. To do so would be to damage spiritual life itself. True asthesis, rather, means to reorient our desires toward their ultimate fulfillment. So what's the essence of gluttony? What's the essence of envy? To emulate, to obtain. Asthesis intends to help us pass from a narrow and limited human desire to the desire for God. In God's presence, we feel liberated and know lasting joy. In my work, I've found that it's walking through the pain that heals us. Most of us work really, sometimes we can spend our whole life finding a way around the pain, over the pain, any way to not deal with the pain. but it's through the pain. And that's our, that is Christians, it's a unique piece of our theology. It's there is no other religion, maybe one, say that out loud. We are called to carry the cross, to be nailed on the cross with Christ, to suffer, be co-sufferers with Christ. That means going through the pain to become healed. Let me interject here, because I meant to say at the beginning, there are index cards in your folders for questions. So please write them down, even if it's just thoughts and reflections. We're gonna take some time with that in a minute. So how do we withhold judgment and discover the true role of our inward parts? First, we stop striving on our own. Curiosity and compassion, the both and, is how we find our path through the pain of the cross. We are both wounded and healed, right? The two are true simultaneously. No one in here has not experienced healing in their life. No one in here has not experienced woundedness. Our God is the lion and the lamb, two opposites that are both true. Alpha, omega, beginning and end, two opposites that are true at the same time. We are made in his image. We reflect this both and duality, this reality of both and. So we first stop striving, but we don't stop striving and never strive again, okay? And this is where the both end gets complicated. The self-help message of our world says it's all on us, right? And even if we don't read self-help books, and I don't, and even if you don't watch Oprah, and I don't, there's still a pervasive message in our culture. It's everywhere that self-help, help yourself. You can do it on your own. You can find the strength within. So the self-sufficient nature gets in the way of our relationship with God. We hear these messages that are meant to give us a target, right? They're meant to give us an aim in our Christian life. Be more loving. Be more patient. Be more, be more, be more. Be better. Have more fruit of the Spirit. Be more loving, joyful, patient, kindness, goodness, gentleness, have more self-control, more calm, more compassion, be more virtuous. But these virtues are not something we can strive for or try to become, but rather it's something we discover within ourselves. If we're made in his image and God has already all these wonderful virtues, it's in there somewhere, just covered up by hurt, by resentment, by our stories. So it's easier to discover God's goodness when we pay attention to the story and we clean out the closet, as we talked about last night. Also, I thought about that analogy. We're never done cleaning out the closet. Right? That's just life. We accumulate more. So this is an ongoing process. Discover God's goodness within yourself. Believe it's already there. And that will calm the striving of trying to become more like your sister in Christ who looks more orthodox. So it says really orthodox things. I don't want to be like her. I want to be who God made me to be. A convert who's only been a priest's wife in the Orthodox Church for 3 years. I'm a baby. My gosh, I have so much to learn about clergy ministry, or being a clergy wife in ministry. Right? But what I do know is that I will be used by God if I take ownership of the strengths that he has given me. If I take ownership of the goodness that is in me, he'll be able to use me no matter how few years of experience I've had as a clergy wife in the Orthodox Church. So in this journey of discovery, I don't know about you, but I have a part of me that comes up. It's like strengths, goodness, I don't know. Sounds really dangerous. Yeah. Sounds really dangerous to focus on that. And it is. And so I caution you, do it with humility. Do it in your prayer life. Do it before the cross. Do it with other people who are going to feed you humility. Right, I've got some friends. I'm not talking to them about this stuff because they're going to say, yeah, you go, girl. You got all the strength you need. And they're not talking about the strength of the Lord. Right, so it is an area to be cautious. So I want to go on here to talk about Mary and Martha. The slowing down to speed up. But I want to take a poll of who would like for me to unpack a little bit more about this being made in God's image. Who would like for me to go on to Mary and Martha? Okay, y'all win. So y'all that want to hear more about God's image, I've got notes I can share with you later.
Can I just interject something?
Yes, please.
Here?
This week of time.
Because this actually really ties in with the point that Father John made this morning in his homily about, you know, we're immortal, immortal. And the sin is all this baggage that clings to us that we have to dump the garbage. And it was just a really good correlation that, you know, and I have two kids that are outside of the faith right now. And what I see in this younger generation is, I don't know that they really believe they're immortal. It's very lacking. And therefore, there's no immediacy to resolve sin or issues. There is no sin, you know. What does it matter? And so I thought that was a really, really good correlation that happened in the homily this morning, that, you know, when we believe that we're immortal and we shared that immortal life with God, yes, all of those things are present in us.
Right.
We just have to get rid of the baggage to let those surface.
Yes, and how we go about getting rid of the baggage is the essence of what I want to share with you all. Right? That it's not through striving. It's not through your own effort. It's not through wishing you were different or wishing you were more like so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Trying to emulate others. It is the refining fire in your hearts and bringing compassion to your own heart, to your own sin. Thank you. Okay. So we have Mary and Martha. I love these ladies. I love both of them. This icon depicts one of the most universal intentions. As you'll see, not as extreme as Paul saying Cardinal serves the law of sin, but perhaps no passage in Scripture better describes the conflict and struggle we feel as women than one of Mary and Martha in the Gospel of Luke. We want to worship like Mary, but the Martha inside us keeps bossing us around. Or we want to have a tidy house, but another book beckons. These sisters are cast as the classic example or archetype of the fine line between action and contemplation. We see right into the troubled heart of Martha, but what she says in self-pity, Lord, don't you care? She's upset with her sister and accuses her of purposefully leaving her to do all the work. while Mary just sits around looking spiritual. Martha feels sorry for her hard-working self. Mary seems quite oblivious to all of her sister's agitation and anxiety. So how does Martha decide to resolve the issue? She says to Jesus, "Tell her to help me." Neither a statement nor a suggestion, but a demand that Martha makes of the Lord. What are Martha's expectations? But it's here that we easily lose sight of one of the main points of the story. Jesus did not rebuke Martha for her serving, but he taught that we should serve our neighbor. He corrected her for her irritability in serving and for her misinterpretation of Mary's just sitting around. Mary's heart was not about being lazy. Her heart was about resting at her Lord's feet. Martha's focus, on the other hand, was all about Martha, right? As if the agenda part of her was up front and center. Instead of applauding Martha, which is what she wanted, Jesus gently rebukes her, telling her, "Mary has chosen the better part, which shall not be taken away from her." And essentially that being is primary to doing. Doing is not bad. It's just secondary. There were enough oohs and ahs last night when I read this one prayer. I'm going to read it again from the front of this one. Help my tasker nature to remember that I have more work. Help my tasker nature to remember that if I have more work than what I can get done in a healthy amount of work hours a day, then I'm doing more than what God has called me to do. So what we're not being taught, we are not being taught that one way is right and one way is wrong. Right? Taking action, serving parishioners, serving the church is not wrong against sitting and reading your scriptures and saying your prayers and having Bible studies at home. One is not better, or one is not right and one is not wrong. One actually is not better than the other. Right? These are words of category that confuse us. It's about both and. So being both a servant and contemplative, reflecting on Christ and his love and compassion for us. Sometimes, and this is part of what I was explaining yesterday about taking a long time to grieve my mother's role in my life. And at the time feeling like I need a lot of time for this. So sometimes it becomes like a primary, like that was contemplative space for me. And now I'm in action space with my mom. It took a long time before I could take action. I had to spend a lot of time in contemplation. So as these two sisters, each of you have your own strengths and weaknesses, your own virtues and passions. What we are being taught is about priorities. When Jesus corrected Martha, he didn't say, "Why can't you be more like Mary?" He knew Martha would never be Mary, and Mary would never be Martha. But when the two were faced with a choice to work or worship, Jesus said, "Mary has chosen the better part." In other words, Mary has her priorities in order. Martha had her priorities backwards. This better part, this good portion, was available to both Martha and Mary, as it is to each of us, regardless of our gifts or our personality types. Martha opened her home to Jesus, but that doesn't mean she opened her heart. In her eagerness to serve, she almost missed the opportunity to truly know Jesus, to have a relationship. Some of us are more naturally inclined towards busyness, and others towards quietness and stillness. Both are good and necessary. Again, being is primary to doing. Doing is not bad, it's just secondary. Martha was not rebuked for working, she was rebuked for her embittered heart. We need to strive for balance between faithfully carrying out our daily duties and being intentional and deliberate to to open the Holy Spirit's movement into these daily tasks. To have a ribbon tied on certain items in my home that have to do with chores. The vacuum cleaner, the dust can. And these ribbons, on a good day, remind me to pray while I'm cleaning. That it can happen as both and. But the time we spend with Jesus at his feet in prayer and devotion, it anchors us to execute our to-do list with a peaceful spirit, rather than, oh, I've got to get this done. Oh, and I've got to get that done, right? And, oh, someone's going to be here. I've got to, gotta. Right? It's like saying should. Gotta puts a lot of pressure, unnecessary pressure. We can choose. Here's a good one. So we can choose by saying, we can substitute the word should or gotta or must with I could. Because then we have options. We have the option to hone into Mary's calmness and peacefully go about getting the laundry done, picking up the kids, going to help a parishioner, etc., etc., etc. I can do that in the spirit of peace. Only if we have plugged in to Christ first. So time is a thing. It's limited. We've each been given a certain amount of time in our lives. We don't know how much, what that is, but God. Sometimes I wish I could know, but not usually. And so feeding our spirit in those contemplative times gives us the energy, the right energy, right? Not caffeine energy, right? Not the energy that motivates us to go do something with impulse, but the calm, peaceful, contemplative, decisive energy, the knowing energy, right? Making decisions, constantly making decisions. How do we decide? How do we know how to decide? That could be a workshop all in and of itself. But we don't have time for that. So knowing that our time is limited, and we're born with a certain amount of time and energy, and as our age diversity in here shows, we know that the older we get, the smaller our energy gets. It's just biology. So what do we do with that? With our life, we'll reflect our values. Your choice to even be here. Right? Reflects your values. It reflects what you find important, what you prioritize as important. I've heard some stories since being here about what the circumstances in which people are here. I'm just like, wow, like you really made this a priority to be here. Right? That's one of those moments like, hey, yeah, good, good. Thank God I was given the strength and the fortitude to make that a priority. So, in our identities as women, we're all a Christian employee, for example. We're all a Christian teacher, Christian mother. And it's not a mother who is a Christian, right? You're a Christian mother. You're a Christian nurse. You're a Christian whatever your role is. You're a Christian clergy wife. You're not a clergy wife who's a Christian, right? Christian is our primary identifier. And then what we do is secondary. So that's an example of how these two, if you go through life thinking it the other way around, you're leading with your Martha self first, with the idea of I'm a doer before I am a beer. I made up a word. I'm going to have you make a to-be list later on. Because being is not something we know how to do well. It's not something our culture really even teaches us how to do, even our Christian culture. So one suggestion I have for you is start with foundations. And, you know, we're all in different spaces, like we're not home, right? So I heard a couple people talking about, like, this feels unfamiliar, right? It's just I'm not in my space. So this happened to me this morning, too, as I step out of bed. I usually get out of bed on the other side, right? And so I was just all thrown off. And as soon as my feet touched the floor, I remembered this suggestion, and I crossed myself. And the bed is higher than my bed. I mean, you know, it's just, we're not in our own space. But the suggestion is cross yourself before your feet touch the ground. Right? Now, how many of you use this thing, this device, to wake you up in the morning? I'm curious. Okay. Enough. This thing, it's not a phone, is way more than a phone. I don't know what, it's a device, I guess that's what they call it now. And if you use it to wake yourself up, you're most likely going to get bombarded with a bunch of stimulation. Right? With 20 options right in your face. And if you have badges on, which you can see I have my little red circles on there, I think that's called a badge. I'm so technically challenged, sorry.
Notifications.
Then you see, whoa, 5, 11, 4, oh my, right? Your Martha gets kicked into high gear right off the bat. I'd love to say, get an old-fashioned alarm clock. But your spouse might not like that, which is why I actually use this. But what I can say is put your daily reading on your front page. And if anything, if you're waking up, you're just laying there, and if you're like me, you might click on a few other icons before you click on that one. Just start with that one. And I can tell you, in my own life, it makes a difference. Even if I just read the daily readings before I click that icon on the email or the text message or whatever it might be, we have to learn how to navigate this spiritually. Otherwise, it will run our lives. Thank you. I fought my husband on that. I had a flip phone in college. I got my first cell phone in college. And I just got rid of my flip phone last year. Don't want to deal with it. I want to read you a quote, and this is in your handout, so you have it to refer to later, by John Wesley. John Wesley is the one who started the Methodist movement, if you're familiar with the Protestant churches. Oh, begin. Fix some part of every day for private exercises, whether you like it or no. Read and pray daily. It is for your life. There is no other way. Else you will be a trifler all of your days. Do justice to your own soul. Give it time and means to grow. Do not starve yourself any longer.
Can you show us the page I'm starting?
Yes, of course. So it's going to be in this one. So in the bottom of page 2. In fact, I'm going to turn to page 2. Nice segue. Thank you. So before going on to these really fun-looking pictures here, the second suggestion I have is to sit in prayer and don't get attached to what happens. So that's where this can become a spiritual tool. Set a timer for 5 minutes if that's all you have. For 3 minutes, if that's all you have. For 10, for 15, whatever you can give that day, just set a timer. Just show up in prayer and try not to get attached to what happens in that 10 minutes. What I mean by that is there are seasons where we have little smaller faith than other seasons. Right? There's seasons where prayer feels like chewing rocks, like it's just hard and grueling. There's times where prayer is like drinking water. It just comes easy and we want it and we crave it and it just flows. That's normal. I've read a lot of literature on spiritual development, people who've studied the ebb and flow of faith journeys. It's just so normalizing when you're really down and out and maybe you're in a dark night of the soul season that prayer is not meant to be easy. If it was easy, everyone would do it. So set a timer, and one of the other things about prayer is that we talked about inner chatter. Have a little pad of paper to write down that "oh, don't forget" thought. Right? A as you're praying that quiet space, that's when all those other thoughts of what needs to get done today, the Martha in us, what needs to get done before a deadline, all these things come to the surface. Just jot it down. And it clears, it just clears the inner space. I recommend giving yourself at least a 5-minute time to prepare for prayer. Right? Prayer isn't something, let's see, that's a good analogy. Cooking a meal. You have to prepare before you cook a meal. Prayer is the same way. And then trust God with the results of you showing up. So if nothing happens, meaning you don't feel a conviction, you don't feel encouraged, you don't feel resolve about something you're praying, that's okay. You're trusting that you're just showing up and that what you've brought to Christ is in His hands. Not to say you're not going to grab it back. That's human nature. But just because you grab it back doesn't mean He doesn't have it anymore. Right? He's everywhere present, filling all things. So He's so much bigger than us. Thank God. Okay, on your handout, you've got these cute little pictures. Some aren't so cute. This is a woman holding a cup of coffee, looking a bit haggard. And then next to her is a woman, she's supposed to have like octopus, like multiple arms. She's multitasking. She's trying to do it all. Yeah, that's how it feels sometimes. And then next to that is a burdened caregiver. And I apologize, that didn't come through very clearly on the copies. But it's a man with a boy on his back. And he's got a bag of stuff that's got a tree growing out of it. And next to him is the same version of him, but healed. So he's still a problem solver. He's still got a life ring. He's still in charge of a lot of stuff. But he's doing it peacefully. So these are just kind of some pictures to give you an idea of what I've been discussing. To unburden our helper is a journey. I want to give you guys 3 things to write down. It's not in your handout. How do we measure progress? And this is where, when Janine introduced me yesterday, she mentioned the wisdom of psychology integrated with the wisdom of our spiritual life. And this is psychology wisdom. I can't find any scriptures to inform this piece. But the piece that does inform it is that our God is patient, loving, and kind. Okay? When we begin to seriously step forward towards healing, and I say seriously because we've talked about how it's painful, right? Healing means we have to go through the cross, we have to step towards pain, which is counterintuitive, right? We have to trust that the Lord is going before us, He's already been before us, and that He's carrying us through it. And so we measure progress by 3 things. Intensity, duration, and frequency.
That sounds like a science project.
Yes. It could be an experiment. So pick an undesired behavior that you're wanting to have transformed in your life. And transformed is the word I'm choosing intentionally here. Not control it. Not get rid of it. Transform it. So I used anger and anxiety a lot yesterday. Do you guys like those examples? Anyone else offer another example that might be would like to use. Undesired behavior, undesired thoughts. And we'll go with anxiety. Mm-hmm. Our fears fuel most of our undesired behavior. Actually, all of our undesired behavior. So, if I'm trying to be less anxious, if I'm trying to, be less anxious, there's a lot of different ways anxiety manifests itself. One way that I have found is a beautiful way to just, it's very subtle and very easy, walk slower. Literally, turn the volume down on that hurry up voice inside. The hurry feeds anxiety, sends cortisol to all of your body. Once that biological action takes place, it's really hard to put on the brakes. That's why people recommend praying in the morning, before you get the speed of the day going, because it's really hard to put on the brakes. Anyway, I digress. So I'm trying to be less anxious, and the advice I'm given is to slow down physically, literally, slow down. And I find that I'm catching myself slowing down more often than I'm looking at progress and frequency. If I find that I'm still saying hurry up to myself, but it's not so intense, right? It's kind of it's a calmer, like, oh, someone says waiting on you. Or maybe it's more appropriate context where I do need to hurry. I want to be on time for work. Yes. Catch the bus. Then that's progress in intensity. Like hurrying to get somewhere where you're just going to sit around and wait. Hurrying just for the sake of hurrying, because if you chronically wake up late, these are things you choose. These are things you can change. So if I'm trying to hurry less and it's been a chronic issue in my life, just to be like, so my husband used to call me Tasmanian devil. So like 5 minutes before I'm ready to leave the house, so I'm just like, I'm going to grab this, I'm going to do that, you know, I'm like walking up and down the house, you know, I want to make sure I got all my creature comforts, right? He doesn't call me that anymore, thank God. He might still think it, but the duration, the length of time in which I struggle with the hurry, there's progress in that. So, and that's not like my favorite example for duration, but that's what I have for you right now. As I measure that progress, then I can come before the Lord in true humility, right? Not false humility. Truth in our inward hearts means being honest. And being honest means I'm not perfect. I'm going to struggle with the hurry pressure my whole life. That's honest. It doesn't mean I'm grabbing it back, right? It means I'm being honest that this is a struggle. Okay. How to slow down.
Helps me.
Yes, please.
Start sooner.
Start sooner. Give yourself more time.
Give yourself a little more time. Yeah.
Because it's a choice.
Yes, it is. It has made all the difference in the world in my life.
I love it. Thank you.
I think of Chai Kim Chai Chi, of course, and the Tai Chi teacher. He says there's no such thing as multitasking. He says you only can do one thing at a time. Remember him saying, you can wash dishes, that's what you're doing. Yeah. So I think that was a good statement, you know, I mean,
it's very true.
Don't multitask. It's just concentrating on what you're doing.
Right. Being present to the moment.
Yeah. Yes.
Thomas Kelly says, God never guides us into an intolerable scramble of panting feverishness. God never guides us into an intolerable scramble of panting feverishness. We're in that space, we know we're not where He wants us. We know we're not in His in the best place. So how do we slow down? Maybe you have to ask yourself a different version of that question. You know, how do you try to slow down? Or what do you wish you could do to slow down? Maybe it's a season of life, you've got three little ones. That's just not an option right now. Just not an option. Well, then you recognize season, right? We have seasons of life. So I'm going to invite you to make two lists. The first one is a list of things you wish you could do to love yourself better. I'm going to give you about 2 to 3 minutes to make this list. I'm going to actually combine these two lists. So I said I was going to give you two, but it's just one. You can also call this your to-be list.
So what I would like to be to love myself better?
No, the things you do in order to be. So the things you would do for contemplation. Things you would do to be present to your prayers or your reading. So, for example, let's keep them separate. I'm sorry. they can be combined, but all right. So, I'll give you a few minutes to write your first list. Things you want to do to love yourself better. So the list you just made is the beginning of your to-be list. Okay, it's a starting point. We're going to work on the to-be list in just a minute. Would anybody be willing to share the things you wrote down? For those of you who just came in, having people write down the things that they can do to love themselves better.
Okay. Oh, quiet time, eat better, and exercise.
Okay. Can you unpack quiet time and what that means for you? Would you be willing to do that?
Do it. Mm-hmm. I wake up and I perform and run, and I don't stop until I fall into bed.
I see. Mm-hmm. What was the third one?
Exercise.
Oh, the second one.
Oh, eat better.
Eat better. Okay. Anyone else?
Actually spend quality time with friends. Mm-hmm. Which has a pretty much as hard. Go to confession, which is tricky when your husband is the priest. And for me, I mean, you can probably just generalize it into do something that I am very, very good at. And this can be different for everybody. But something that, for me, it was I used to sing, like seriously. Sing, classically sing. I haven't done that probably since my kids were born. Mm-hmm. And so thinking back, what would I really, really want to do? What really helps me? And it could be anything, I think, that gives you joy that you know that you have a gift for, but don't necessarily carve the space out of your life for. So do something you're good at. Okay. Something useful that you're good at. It's mostly really good at sitting and watching TV. That's not a thing.
Yeah, that's taking ownership of strength.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Was there someone else think about the end?
Yeah, my first thing was exercise and then fulfill my spiritual obligations.
Okay. So exercise, eating better are some pretty universal things we all want to do more of and do a better job at. So I'm going to invite you now to break it down. What does that mean for you to exercise? Does it mean go for a walk more often? Does it mean get a gym membership? Does it mean sign up for Tai Chi? What does it mean? So take a minute, if exercise is on your list, or any, I mean, even if that's not on your list, take your top three and break it down.
Is this just to be with?
No. This is just still so working on the loving yourself better list. What does it mean to eat better? Does it mean making a meal plan? Does it mean actually making the grocery list? Does it mean staying on the perimeter of the grocery store? Does it mean researching where your farmers markets are?
In the same boat with you.
So as clergy wives, as clergy wives, there's an isolation that comes with it. And opportunities like this hopefully counter that, but it's not enough. It's not enough to come to retreats once a year, twice a year, however often you get to see your sisters. It's not meant to be enough. We do live in a world of technology, and self-confessed earlier, I'm not very technologically capable. Can't even say the word right. And so it takes everything in me to make effort. It is on my list to call those special sisters. Now, initially cultivating those sister relationships, that happens here. Happens at other clergy gatherings. And it takes that effort of literally saying, will you be my friend? Those are hard words to say. Really hard words to say, to make that phone call. Mm-hmm. But that phone weighs 500 pounds. Mm-hmm. Right? It is so hard to pick up that phone. So we are going to take a break here in just a minute. I talked about asking for help. And I want to share with you this rule of integrity. Asking for help is risky, right? So walking up to someone and saying, will you be my friend? It's so scary. And yet, if it's a need that you have in your life, if you do not have a single sister where you can just call when you need to call, then sometimes the risk is worth it. However, the rule of integrity, whether you're asking for help or asking someone to be your friend, basically whenever you're asking for something risky, it feels risky to you, is that you're not allowed to ask others for help until you've prepared emotionally and spiritually for them to say no and turn you down. You're not allowed to ask for others for help until you've prepared yourself emotionally and spiritually for them to say no and turn you down. This is about putting your expectations in check and putting them in their proper place of recognizing, is this a want or a need? So we don't demand, right? We make a request. We know we're functioning out of expectations when we become demanding. We know we're functioning out of expectations when we're demanding. So after the break, I'm going to talk about expectations, disappointment, and forgiveness. Mostly forgiveness of yourself. That's where I believe we all struggle most. And we didn't get to the to-be list, so pray about it and do it on your own. And we might have time to get to some other exercises after, but I think I'll stop there.